going to discuss two verses this morning. Text, chapter 24, canto 3, texts 11 and 12. Here's the scene. Lord Brahma has come to the hermitage of Kardava Muni and Devahuti. Already 9 daughters were born, and at this particular juncture of time, Devahuti is now pregnant, and the child within the womb is Lord Vishnu, who will be soon known as Kapila Dev, Lord Kapila. It was already told by Lord Vishnu himself that he would appear as the son, because Kardava Muni wanted Lord Vishnu as his son. Pretty interesting qualification. Pure devotion and gentle affection. So, Devahuti, Kardava Muni, marriage, tens of thousands of years of performing austerities together, qualifying themselves to produce good offspring, and many things happen. 9 daughters are born. Now Devahuti is with Lord Vishnu in her womb. Very fortunate personality. And Lord Brahma has come to do a number of things. He's going to worship Lord Vishnu. He's going to worship his son, because Kardava Muni is his son. And once the first verse is, one who is, the Lord is worshipable, and one who is in such a relationship, one who is in such a relationship with the personality of Godhead, that one is qualified to be father or mother, that person is also worshipable. So he worships, the Lord worships his son, and he's going to make some other pronouncements. Prior to this, it's important, the previous chapter, 23, Devahuti is lamenting, that's the title of the chapter, that we've spent such long time together and I've not taken advantage of all that your association can afford. I've not taken advantage of liberation. Yesterday we spoke about this liberation idea. So he doesn't mean, you know, the neutrality, merging kind of liberation, but the positive liberation, being engaged, ultimate liberation, being engaged in perfect service to the Supreme Lord. In the beginning of this chapter, Kardava Muni says, don't lament. Very soon, the personality of Godhead is going to appear as your son, and he will give you that by his teachings of Sankhya and perfected devotional service. So now, here we are. Kapila Dev is within the womb of Devahuti, who will soon become the son of Kardama and Devahuti. And Brahma is about to speak. Text 11. After worshipping the Supreme Lord with gladdened senses and a pure heart for his, that's Kapila Dev's, intended activities as an incarnation, Brahma spoke as follows to Kardama and Devahuti. Purport for text 11. As explained in Bhagavad Gita 4th chapter, anyone who understands the transcendental activities, appearance, and disappearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is to be considered liberated. Brahma, therefore, is a liberated soul. Although He is in charge of this material world. He is not exactly like the common living entity, since he is liberated from the majority of the follies of the common living entities. He was in knowledge of the appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he therefore worshipped the Lord's activities. And with a glad heart, he also praised Kardava Muni, because the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as Kapila, had appeared as his son. When it would become the father of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it is certainly a great devotee. There is a verse spoken by a Brahmana in which he says that he does not know what the Vedas and the Puranas are, but while others might be interested in the Vedas and the Puranas, he is interested in Nanda Maharaj, who appeared as the father of Krishna. The Brahmana wanted to worship Nanda Maharaj because the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as a child, crawled in the yard of his house. These are some of the good sentiments of devotees. If a recognized devotee brings forth the Supreme Personality of Godhead as his son, he should be praised! Exclamation point. Brahma, therefore, not only worshipped the incarnation of Godhead, Kapila, but also praised his so-called father, Kardava Muni. And here's how he starts his praise, text 12. Lord Brahma said, "My dear son Kardama," because that's the relationship father-son, his son is going to have as his son the Supreme Lord. "My dear son Kardama, since you have completely accepted my instructions without duplicity, showing them proper respect, you have worshipped me properly. Whatever instructions you took from me, you have carried out, and thereby you have honored me." Important message and purport. Lord Brahma, as the first living entity within the universe, is supposed to be the spiritual master of everyone, and he is also the father, the creator of all beings. Kardava Muni is one of the Prajapatis, or creators of living entities, and he is also a son of Brahma. Brahma praises Kardava because he carried out the orders of the spiritual master in toto and without cheating. A conditioned soul in the material world has disqualifications, has the disqualification of cheating. He has four disqualifications. He is sure to commit mistakes, he is sure to be illusioned, he is prone to cheat others, and his senses are imperfect. But if one carries out the order of the spiritual master by disciplic succession or the parampara system, he overcomes the four defects. Therefore, knowledge received from the bona fide spiritual master is not cheating. Any other knowledge which is manufactured by the conditioned soul is cheating. Only Brahma knew well that Kardava Muni exactly carried out the instructions received from him, Brahma, and that he, Kardava, actually honored his spiritual master. To honor the spiritual master means to carry out his instructions word for word. So, a few points quickly. The word that's used in the verse is nirvyalika, or nirvyalikata. This is what the way the Prabhupada has translated it here is without duplicity. And it's a nice word. It's an important word that's used in maybe a dozen places in the Bhagavatam. Without pretense, without duplicity, without sin. It has these different meanings. With full sincerity. So it has a lot to do with our topic yesterday. The Anartha-Nirvritti topic, because it's we may be here and our goal is there, and Anartha-Nirvritti is to remove obstacles so we can get to where we want to go. And then there's this struggle of being attached to what we don't want, because it's in our heart and we're attached to it, and so there's unsteadiness because of that. And then the sincerity is, we're very clear what we want, and we're not just saying it. This is this nirvilika. It's without duplicity. We say it because we mean it, or go back, we mean it. Like, we know inside, deep inside, there's a hankering. Now, the hankering has a mix. And nirvilika is one come to the point where there's no mix. Although I may not be there yet, I'm ready to let go now of those things that are holding me to the material conception of life. Mainly, the main forces are hankering to be in the position of Krishna, are hankering to be the enjoyer, the Purusha, whether in a male body or female body, the Purusha, the enjoyer. We don't want to let go of that. We want to be happy. We don't want to let go of it, because that's our notion of being happy. And if we let go of that, then where's our happiness? So we're left with nothing. That's the Buddhist conception. You know, so they like it. That's have nothing. And then we won't have suffering. We won't have misery. Not easy. It's not natural. Because we want happiness, not just cessation of misery. We want happiness. We're holding on to the conception arising out of envy of he who was actually the enjoyer. So it's not embracing the deepest part of our heart, the position of Krishna should be the enjoyer. Anukulyena, Rupa Goswami's definition of bhakti. Anukulyena. Really nice understanding. Such a simple. Anyadi lashita shunyam jnana karmajinavatam. Anukulyena Krishna Nushivanam Bhakti Uttama Bhakti is Uttama Bhakti. Uttama Bhakti is, I want Krishna to be pleased. It's a hankering, a cultivation of our natural state of love, where the happiness is the beloved's happiness. That's our happiness. And we hold on to something else. And that's this vyalika. I want to be Krishna's devotee because I want my happiness. I want my misery to end, and I want, you know, everything to be nice. And because there are certainly people that go in the other direction. Well, well, everything's not nice, but I'm nice. I'm a good devotee. Why are bad things happening? And so forth. So, nirvilika, there's three parts to this. Nirvilika is, Brahma's appreciating that Kardama has followed his instruction without duplicity. Now, his instruction was, please assist me in creating good praja. Because Brahma's created the universe, he's requested his son as a prajapati, a father of mankind, to produce living entities, good ones. And so it was, yes, sir, yes, father. And because Karma was such an elevated devotee, he wanted not just children to assist his father, but he wanted the personality of Godhead as his son. So Brahma's appreciating he did this without duplicity. Now this word nirvyalika is used when here's some other usages from the Bhagavatam. Lord Brahma comes before Lord Vishnu on behalf of the demigods that are behind him, saying to Lord Vishnu, I have worshipped you nirvyalika. So Brahma has that qualification. He therefore can recognize one who has that qualification, karna. And in 1st Canto, chapter 4, Vyasadeva is speaking to Narada about his compiling of the Vedas, and he said, this nirvyalika word, I worship the Vedas without pretense, and therefore I was able to have full knowledge of the Vedas, and then now I'm in the position to write them down, and yet I'm feeling some difficulty, some imperfection, some discomfort. And that was, of course, not because he was defective, it was because it was part of the plan of Narada to come to instruct him and so forth, and then do a rewrite on the Bhagavad Purana, revision number 2. Or version number 2, because the initial was already compiled. So, nirvyalika. And this example that's in the purport here is one Brahmana says, people may say, I know the Vedas and Puranas. As far as I'm concerned, I don't, but I know one thing. Nanda Maharaj is to be worshipped. Because in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj, the personality of God is crawling in his courtyard. So, this is a very beautiful, poetic way of saying the same thing, nirvyalika. What's the goal of the Vedas? It's to know Krishna. And one can know Krishna by this method of honoring that which is dear to Krishna. That's the way of approaching Krishna. Of becoming, that this is part of this nirvyalika message. Second is, Prabhupada takes in the purport, he flips it around the other way, and says that the instructions of such a person as Brahma is without pretense. One is the follower, the other is the preceptor, and then the teachings of one who is nirvyalika is not compromised. Knowledge received from bona fide spiritual masters is not cheating. So this cheating, what, go back to the earlier part of the purport, is connected to this idea of duplicity. Without duplicity. Duplicity is say one thing, do another thing. It's duplicity, and people have a problem, rightly so, with say one thing, do another thing. So one who is, go the other direction, one who is worthy of your trust is, there's no duplicity. They don't say one thing and do another thing. Like Prabhupada would explain it this way. If a teacher says, don't do as I do, but do as I say, then, you know, excuse me. Then he would give the example. The teacher is speaking some high philosophy, and then after teaching, he goes and smokes a cigarette. An example that Prabhupada is giving. You know, if he can't control his senses and he's teaching spiritual subjects, how can he know spiritual subjects? It's cheating. Duplicity. So one should not hear from such a person. I mean, yeah. So back to the message of the purport. Brahma's message is worth hearing because it's from that place where there's the message itself is without cheating. The person who's hearing has the capacity. And so he's using Prabhupada's language here, Karnama followed his instruction in toto. In toto is a Latin term, in total, without missing anything, without editing anything out, and the fullness was there, and he just did what he was requested to do in submission to his father. Of course, submission to his father in service to Lord Vishnu, who wanted Brahma to do the service of creating and then filling up the universe. So the Prajapati's son, Karma, was doing exactly that, which is very pleasing to Lord Vishnu. And therefore, Lord Vishnu has appeared as his son, because that was his specific desire of service, in addition to fulfilling the desire of his father. And last point is this one. We spoke about this not yesterday, but the day before on Saturday. The Baladeva Vidyabhusan's commentary on Bhagavad Gita 241 is this Vyavasayatmika Buddhi, this very singular attention, which is saying here, to honor the spiritual master means to carry out his instruction word for word, without getting deviated, not getting distracted, is taking instructions of the spiritual master as one's life and soul. And that's the rocket fuel. That's what can propel one beyond material existence, to the other side of material existence, into the spiritual realm. You know what a catapult is? You heard that? You know what it is?
I know it.
What is it? Say it.
Like it's something that you swing something over.
Yes. Let's just say, here's a long stick, and here's an object that's captured in a bowl or something at the end of the long stick. And you pull the stick back and back and back, put some object, and then release, and the catapult sends the object flying some distance. You can look it up later. Catapult. Bhakti is like that. I'll end with this. One of my godbrothers recently was describing japa in a similar way. He's using a bow and arrow, similar. And that is, for the bow and arrow, like Ram strung the bow of Lord Shiva, and then again Lord Vishnu. When he strung the bow of Lord Vishnu, he put an arrow, said, "Now, Parashuram, where do I release this arrow?" So you need a target. So for a life of devotion, you need a target, and the target has the center, not just hit the target. You're much more likely to hit the target if you are aiming at the center. And Arjuna, you know this from Mahabharata, he not only, the target that was identified by his teacher Drona, not only saw the target, but he saw the eye, and he couldn't see anything else. He could only see the eye, because that was the target. So here's the Maha Mantra, or here's a life of devotion to Krishna, and you pull back the bow, and you have to be very clear what the target is, and then you have to let go. This is an Arjuna Vritti. You let go of attachment to the temporary and trying to be the enjoyer of the temporary. If you don't let go, how can you progress? The Arjuna Vritti process will be very slow. Thus, there's a willingness to let go. The effect of the Maha Mantra will be diminished. There's effect, unless one is willing to let go. the mantra has the potency to take away everything but pure devotion. We have to be, there's a willingness to let go. There's something on our side and there's something on Krishna's side. There's the mercy from Krishna and there's the willingness to receive the fullness of Krishna's mercy. And that a manifestation of that is willingness to let go. Willingness to let go doesn't mean you give away possessions. It means stopping thinking to diminish and terminate the notion that I'm meant to be the enjoyer of my paraphernalia. Stuff. And happiness is dependent upon how much stuff, and unhappiness is my stuff is being taken by circumstance or a hurricane or something. Another child comes and wants to play with my toys, and I don't want to have another child play with my toys because they're my toys. So one of the things that parents need to do is help children understand that, you know, you share your toys. You can have some sense that they're my toys, that's all right, but it's actually Krishna's toys, and you share because that's what you do when you live in this world. But you can start to learn as a child and then become an adult, and everything actually belongs to Krishna, and we have what is meant for us, and the rest is meant for Krishna's service. It's actually all Krishna's. So letting go of the false sense of proprietorship means it's only possible if you recognize who is the proprietor. And you can't recognize who is the proprietor unless you let go of a misconception. Well, actually, I'm the proprietor of this much. We're the manager, and we're utilizing this much, but it's not ours. I and mine consciousness, the hammameti, you won't get the full effect of maha mantra chanting and a life of devotion. The letting go part has to be there, and it starts with how we chant the holy name and all the other activities of devotional service. So back to the verse and we're done. Brahma is appreciating the karma. You've done it. Yagalika. And so, because you're so purified by that, you're beyond the Narjadavritti stage. You're in the perfect stage. Therefore, the Son, as your Son, the Personality of God has appeared. You're to be honored. I honor you for that achievement. You pleased me very much. And he's one who can give benedictions, and he does. Okay, so any discussion? Yes?
I was reading about different devotees from the first canto and this concept about letting it go. So many of the examples, like Sri Narayan Muni, then Maharaj Yudhishthir, then Maharaj Parikshit, then when the time of death came, they literally let go of their kingdoms and their possessions, and they focused their entire attention on Krishna. But what are the lessons we can draw while they were living and they were possessing all of these things?
They dedicated those things to Krishna. It's a stage. I mean, take Grandfather Bhishma. When he was instructing, he instructed. And then at a certain stage, he relinquished that activity of extending his senses into the field of the object of the senses, and he withdrew them. That's the pratyahara stage. And he fixed, but it wasn't before that, didn't have his mind completely fixed. So the message of Bhagavad Gita is, before that final stage, engage in your prescribed duty and always think of me. Two things. It's not that they didn't always think of Krishna before the final stage. They were always thinking of Krishna before the final stage. And they were engaging in their prescribed duty. And when the time of death came, they withdrew the duty part and just exert the head. It was perfect. That's what we practice.
So basically only somebody practices during the lifetime can do it even later.
Yes. Yes. That's the essence of the whole nectar devotion. Or, you know, the performance of sadhana, I should say. Which is, mold your life in such a way that you always remember Krishna. And then there's the prohibition. And never forget Krishna. It's very powerful. Mold your life. So that includes when chanting japa. It includes when you're doing arti. It includes when you're in the kitchen. It includes when you're with your family members. It includes when you're doing your occupation. It includes when you're doing your homework. It includes everything. Mold your life in such a way. And that's not easy, because, you know, when we're doing something, how do you think of Krishna? You know, you're sitting there in your workstation at work, and, you know, wait a minute, I gotta be thinking of Krishna. So it's attachment brings the mind to the object, even when you're doing something. It's not distracted. It's attentive to the purpose behind this occupation or this study. It's to please Krishna. And I may not immediately see the connection as I'm doing my homework, sitting there, you know, doing some math problems or studying history or something. What's the connection with Krishna? There's minimally, there's intellectual skills that I'm developing by doing this that can be used in Krishna's service. Now the teacher in the classroom may not be thinking that's what the student is up to. But the student is, that's what they're up to. And so forth. That this, for whom are we doing what we're doing? That's the mind goes to Krishna part. Anukulyena. Krishna should be pleased. Something else? Yes?
We were talking about the being steadfast of no duplicity. My perception or my understanding is that is caused because due to the influence of mode of ignorance.
Which is caused?
The being duplicative.
Well, it's a combination, passion and ignorance.
So, at any situation, how do we counter that mode of ignorance?
You take your attention to Krishna. Light dismisses darkness. Yeah. Yes?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, what's the difference between a sin and an offense?
Well, we discussed it yesterday, and the distinction I gave was a functional one. Sin, functional distinction is, sin is something that can be overcome by bhakti. Bhakti has the power to dismiss sin. Whereas, functionally different is offense and its consequent anartha in the heart has the power to block the power of bhakti. It's more difficult. Now, another way of defining the distinction is dharma. We discussed it yesterday. Dharma is how you should conduct your life. And one who conducts their life according to the laws of dharma, the laws of proper conduct, that's dharma. And then those that violate that or neglect that, that's sin. That's a definition. Over here is that which is spiritual, I don't regard as spiritual. That's an offense. So dharma isn't necessarily in and of itself spiritual, like, you know, cleanliness. It says cleanliness is next to godliness, but that's a dharmic principle. Take a bath and brush your teeth in the morning. Clean your room and keep your things neat and clean. Dharma. Spiritual is the Mahamantra and the scripture and the deity and the place of pilgrimage and bhakti itself and the devotees and devotion and the spirit soul that's within every form of life. The tree and the bird and the fish and the animal and other people, devotees or non-devotees. There's a spiritual spark within. And if I don't recognize and honor the spiritual essence of all those things, then I'm going to, that mentality is an offensive mentality. I'm going to do things that are offensive. Okay? Yes?
Related to this, thoughts about Krishna during the final stages.
Talks about Krishna?
Thoughts about Krishna during the final stages.
In the final stages?
Yes.
Like leading to death?
Yes.
Okay.
So when a person is in that stage, a person may be aware of Krishna and our God, like from India, or a person somewhere here who's not aware about Krishna. So when they are hitting their final stages, we suggest that, you know, they hear the chanting, either a person doing or we can put Prabhupada chanting.
Yes.
So would it actually the conscience should be on Krishna, right? So external hearing, would it be helpful for
yes
them?
Because it goes to the soul immediately.
Okay.
Even if they're in a coma.
Okay. Oh, okay. Thank you.
Yes.
At the time of death, even though if you don't do anything related to Krishna, does your soul go back to Krishna anyway?
Well, it depends. It's up to Krishna. The rule that Krishna can make exceptions to the rule. The rule is, whatever your mind is fixed on, that's where you go. The exception to the rule is, here's a nice devotee. And this nice devotee, they've served me so earnestly and sincerely and honestly and over such a long period of time. And due to circumstance, their mind is not on me. Krishna may intervene and enter the mind of that devotee and take him to him. Prabhupada explained that there. So, it's something like going to school or not going to school. Mm-hmm. And not going to school, I just expect the school is going to give me an honorary degree. That I completed studies and they give me a certificate. You're a graduate of our school. Mm-hmm. That can happen. Schools do that sometimes. But don't count on it. Don't live your life that way. You go to school. You enroll, take the exams, and get your certificate. So Krishna can intervene. He can... But so what we should do is we practice remembering Krishna, serving Krishna, devoting ourselves to Krishna, because we want that. Now, supposing at the end of such a devotee's life, at the moment of death, their mind is not fixed on Krishna. Krishna can intervene. Because he loves his devotee, as the devotees love him. He's very kind. That's why they love him. He's so kind.
In the past, I have heard from you that it is the commentary of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur.
Yes, it is, I checked and it's Balaji.
Oh, it's, I don't know.
Balaji.
Maharaj.
Yes.
All demigods, whatever we ask, they are fulfilling immediately. But if we go
not
to
always.
Vishnu...
Not always.
He is not...
more easily.
Interested to give.
More easily, yeah.
That's why in our Calcutta, most of the people...
Yeah, don't
they
know.
Are going to demigod. Then they do not want to see Krishna and all.
Right.
Why? Krishna should keep all this power to him.
Yeah. Well, There's a verse in the fifth canto, I believe it's fifth canto, where Krishna says, I'm not such a fool. These people are coming to me with material desire, and if I fulfill their material desire, they just become more entangled in material activity. I'm not such a fool, I'm not going to give them those things. Then he goes on and says, but if I do give them those things, I'll do it in such a way they'll become freed from that desire, because I'll give my two lotus feet. And when I give my two lotus feet, those other desires are gone. So even when I give them, Dhruva Maharaj, you have the kingdom. His attention isn't being the enjoyer of the kingdoms, and his attention is something else, because he received that mercy. That's the merciful nature of Vishnu or Krishna. Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.